handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
To another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is noon on July 5th in the year of our Lord, 2021. I'm enjoying a hard-earned three-day weekend, although I filmed a sketch yesterday. Just me. It's my version of Bo Burnham, except instead of just me knowing how to do everything technically, what I do is the Righteous Girlfriend films everything. I tell her what to do. I have throw temper tantrums. We make a comedy art, and I apologize to her, and then I send it to my editor to make it all nice and spiffy. But it's the video, which will be out, I don't know, this week or sometime next week, is a GOP cryptocurrency called Trump Coin. As is always the litmus test for my comedy stuff, when the Righteous Girlfriend almost laughs or laughs after holding it in for 5 to 10 seconds, I know I've got a good one. And let's just say it features, what do I do? 7 impressions, all promoting a new cryptocurrency called Trump Coin. And I feel like that's all I want to share because I don't want to spoil any jokes. But man, it was fun. And I'd been putting it off for a while because, you know, I've started to enjoy my weekends a little bit more. And this coincides with my choice. Hopefully it's the one I want to make. But that in 2022, I can only have one job because I am exhausted. I don't know if you can tell. You probably are like, I couldn't tell you were tired, JL. I thought that was just your usual quasi-suicidal tone. It's so weird because I just stopped myself from doing a Ron Reagan because it would be weird to say not afraid of killing myself because I am. So that wouldn't be truthful to my Ron Reagan impression. I only like to use the Ron Reagan voice when I'm actually not afraid of something. That swaggering, douchebaggy, smug confidence that he brings to atheism. I want to respect that confidence and only use it when I believe in it. So no, I'm not suicidal or anything like that. Sorry for... You know what this is? This is actually good. If I start the show musing about suicide, well then everything I say after this will feel like sunshine and ice cream. No, not thinking of that at all. But I am exhausted. I don't sleep well. And in good news, guys, I know you care so much. Normally I'm on here going, day one of the new diet, take 580. Guess where I'm at, folks? Day 8. What? That's right, day 8. I'm on day 8 of a strict diet because last Sunday, took the nephew to see A Quiet Place 2, and which is always frustrating when you've been to the movie twice in the last 18 months, but you have to see the same movie twice. It's like, what do you want? But I didn't mind. There was nothing else I wanted to see. So I get to stand in due to my brother's excessive responsibilities with my older nephew and just his work. I end up being, which is nice, I end up being kind of the stand-in for, much like my uncle was for me with movies and stuff like that, relative to my father. But that was different. That was more cultural. You know, my dad didn't like baseball, so my uncle took me to baseball games. Like, my dad didn't understand baseball. He thought it was stupid. And I got to say, he wasn't totally incorrect. As I get older, I just get more and more... I felt like as an old person, I'm supposed to get more into baseball, but I feel like I keep getting less and less into baseball. Yeah, for my brother, it's just he's a super busy person. Last Sunday we went to a movie. I didn't get popcorn. I just had a bag of M&Ms. Then I forget what I ate for dinner. Probably something like Subway or something. Like that's the unhealthy version of healthy. Like, I had a 6-inch meatball sub, and now I hold up pants and molest kids. Jared Fogle, not afraid of eating subs. I had made a run to the Cheesecake Factory at the mall we went to see the movie in. So I had a piece of chocolate mousse cheesecake, which is when I'm going, when I'm trying not to be full glutton, I just go the 1,100 calorie piece of chocolate mousse cheesecake. When I'm really thinking about ending it all, I go Oreo Dream Cheesecake, which is 1,680 calories, I believe, per slice. And my little concession is whenever I would get that in the restaurant, I would knock off the dollop of mousse fudge on the top, which was like a 300 calorie, just like doorknob of chocolate. I'd be like, you know what? I know by the time I get to the end of this piece of cake, I won't have enough room for that. So that's always my concession. And then I weighed myself at the end of Sunday last week. And I can't remember when I even recorded last week. I think I might've done the episode Sunday. Time means nothing. And I've never weighed that much in my life. Now, granted, the next morning I was 6 pounds lighter just by virtue of not eating through the night, waking up, your body processing stuff. So, the number the next morning represented an all-time high for morning weigh-in, but the weigh-in on, Sunday was an all-time high. Never saw the scale that high. So I said, well, it's now I feel like I'm finally at that scared straight point where you say, okay, now I think we are approaching potential stroke, heart attack, diabetes levels of unhealthy. So I've been eating strict as fuck, and I've worked out 7 of the last 8 days. I'm using different things as a barometer. I have my show in Boston in 3 weeks. 3 weeks from the recording of this podcast, to be exact. And I'm going to see several college friends there. And I want to be able to tell them, remember me? Just look for the fat version of me. But I don't want to have to say to them, remember me? Look for the Larry Flint version of me. Wheeled in on a wheelchair with half my face not working because I just had a diabetic stroke. So We're working hard now. And then the next goal from there is to just, whatever I look like to some of my college friends on this Boston trip will be worse than the last time they saw me. So this is all about mitigating what will already be a bad experience. But the big thing is end of October when I record my special, because it's not just going to be an album, it's going to be a special, where I get somebody to buy it or whether I just offer it on YouTube, unlikely. This is going to be something I think I really want to sell. Pardon me for taking pride in my work after 18 years, but that's a bigger deal. So I'm my first goal, not to get too crazy, is Boston. My next goal is October 23rd, because then I will be putting something on film. And by then, with strict dieting and good exercise habits, I can lose the garbage weight. I won't be in the shape I was when I was 30, or even honestly 30 fucking 8, 37, 38 before my, I was on a good road back to fitness and fucked up a disc in my spine, cervical spine. And I've never really recovered. I've been weak on that side. I've had like cramps and nerve issues, and I'm finally doing the exercises every day. And that's really all it takes is like consistency. And I was just too bummed out and then too busy last year and too stressed to ever really just focus on that shit. So now I am, just because I figure as I look towards life, be either with comedy or beyond comedy, you know, good health can only improve my mood. My mood's probably never going to be great. But bad health, looking, feeling like I'm not my best, looking like shit, being extra hot, you know, because you're just carrying an extra layer of cheesecake and pizza, is just, it doesn't help anybody. So day 8, folks, that's, even though I phrase this in incredibly sort of cynical, pessimistic terms, day 8 of the diet is a nice change from day 1, take 538. So we're doing that. Speaking of Boston, let's get to the obligatory God comedy sometimes really fucks me in the ass. And not in a LGBTQ sex positive kind of way, but in a I don't like this kind of way. Just want to be clear, want to be an ally. But I'm in Boston 3 weeks from tonight, as I just said a couple of minutes ago, in case you were barely listening. And big show for me. City Winery, Boston. Beautiful venue. I want that show. I'm talking to you guys, okay? This is our private chat. I want this show to be my first show where I really feel like, God, this is a taste of what I want my career to be. This could be. So that means hopefully, I don't want to set up the expectations too high, but I was aiming for the capacity's 280, and it's a Monday night, okay? I want 200 seats sold. If I do better than that, wow, fantastic. But if I do less than that, that's probably okay too, but I'd like 200 seats sold. Ambitious, maybe, but here was my ace in the hole. First of all, largest segment of fans in America for Making Podcasts Great Again, my other podcast, which you should listen to if you don't, in 2020 was in the city of Boston. The best spot for our podcast in America was Boston, based on the numbers. So I go, okay, those people obviously dig what I do, or at least some of what I do, so they'll come out to see me. But in addition to that, I have friends in Boston, and I went to Williams College, which is a Massachusetts liberal arts college with a strong alumni network in Boston. And I know because of cameos that were ordered for me and other things, emails I got, that because Williams College is a small school, elite but small, there's a certain kind of community pride when somebody does something big. Joe Biden's new FTC commissioner is this 31-year-old super genius young woman who's now running it. She went to Williams, so I know that. It's like the joke about Jewish athletes in Airplane. It's like Williams College. You got to know George Steinbrenner went to Williams College. So you just sort of start to know famous people who went to Williams. So I said, well, Boston is a great city. Obviously, New York, obviously big, big cities. L.A. and New York are just so big that when I do a show in New York, I'm assuming my special will sell out or sell, at least sell very well, those shows. L.A. is so big that if I went out there, it doesn't matter if I only know, if I only have 100 fans in the, you know, I could have a small, small percentage of fans, but it's so big that it's a lot to draw from. Boston is obviously like a small town, big city. And, but I know that proportional to the city, there's a lot of Williams people there. And you factor in Georgetown, which is obviously not so connected to Boston specifically, but also just a large national university network, there's going to be plenty of people in Boston as well. Okay. So I contact both of those alumni groups with a month out, last Monday. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. Like, between my fans, Pete Dominick's fans, who's on the show with me, some of his fans have bought tickets, and I thank you if you also listen to this show. And you know, maybe City Winery does a little promotion, although I have yet to see a single Instagram post with my show listed out of, you know, promoting, I don't know, 40 shows. So I might have to, I'd like to be contact them from a position of strength with like 100 tickets sold or more before I complain. But I want to be like, why am I paying for your promotion if I have yet to see any promotion on social media networks? You got Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Like, I have yet to see an ad or anything kind of boosting the show. I see 90 other shows being promoted. So, and I'm on a Monday, so I could probably use a little bit of help because it's the worst night of the week to do a show. But anyway, guys, that's just par for the course. It'll feel that much sweeter if the show's a huge success. But then I get emails back from both the Williams and Georgetown alum groups. And they're very happy and blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing. They're not promoting any in-person events yet. And I said, Massachusetts, I believe, has one of the highest vaccination rates in the country. Obviously, their rules are allowing for full capacity at the venue, which is a, you know, could be a weapon in my favor or something that I kill myself with. Not afraid of making a second joke about suicide. But I just thought, well, that seems pretty typical for me. These were my, for that, like, the, I would not have been so quick to go for Boston if, because I don't have a built-in fan base there outside of the podcast. There are other cities like Philadelphia, D.C., New York, maybe even Chicago, where I know I have fans from both gigs and from other things in those cities. Boston was kind of a, I know I have podcast fans, but on top of that, the reason I can be ambitious and go for a bigger venue is because I have the Williams Network, which obviously you send out a notice that the guy who was, the comedian who was super famous during COVID is out there doing a live show, and he's a Williams guy. Whoa, let's go support that. That should be fun. Georgetown, not as much affinity for me. Georgetown has a wealth of more famous comedians than me. Gaffigan, Birbiglia, Mulaney, and Nick Kroll. So there's a lot of Georgetown people. But it's a much bigger network. So all I need is that little tiny percentage of like 40 Georgetown people, maybe a few Georgetown lawyers to go, oh shit, we should go. But, you know, I was banking on those two groups to maybe be worth 30% of my audience, conservatively. Because I'm thinking, oh man, if I can get like 40 Williams people and 15 Georgetown people, like that's a nice chunk. Now the show is at least veering towards respectable, if not an outright success. So I guess for all of you out there who pray, say a prayer that policies change within the next two goddamn weeks at Williams College and Georgetown. And what are the odds? Both schools I went to. The Jesuit Catholic University, who probably has some priests and administrators who voted for Trump, and the radical left liberal arts college in Western Massachusetts, both united in saying, not afraid of fucking over JL's show. But that's you know, I think you guys are used to this by now. This is it's the woe is me portion of the show. But I got to say, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that my two schools would both go above and beyond the CDC, the state of Massachusetts, the city of Boston, in terms of just promoting a show that they're not producing. In other words, this isn't obviously a sanctioned Williams College or Georgetown event. But I was like, well, I mean, maybe could you just do me a solid? Maybe? Me and my mom paid a lot of tuition. Can we just call it a solid? Can we call this one like a I feed your kids for 4 years, you scratch my back? Can we do, no, we can't do that? Okay, so in the next 2 weeks, and with this Delta variant shit, I can't imagine that's going to make them more open to doing a show. But I'm telling you, when I made my calculations to do the show in Boston and when I was offered the larger venue, I paused and said, you know what? Between Williams and Georgetown, I think, and especially Williams, I think I can get this to actually work for me. Maybe not a sellout, but I can get it to work. So I have other things that I'm working on, but if you listen to this podcast and you're a Williams person or a Georgetown person or just you know people in Boston, if you are in Boston, for Christ's sakes, I hope you have your tickets. And I hope you're telling friends. It's what are the tickets? $20? It's not expensive, and it's a really nice venue, and it's a big deal, and I'm coming to your city. So if you are in Boston, I really hope you're coming. But if you have friends, family, people who you may have shared my videos with or who you know me or know my comedy, please let them know. Like, especially if you're a G-Town person or a Williams person, tell them, hey, don't you have friends there? Don't you have cousins? Aren't you there? Isn't your brother there? Like, whatever. This is, this is a big deal. So if it flops, it flops. What else is new in my career? But it really, this is one of those shows where I'm like, this shouldn't flop. This is like, act of God type contract clause shit for me, where it's like, wait, you're telling me we're still not promoting events and they're not even college sanctioned events. They're just an alum is doing an event and you won't post anything about it. Hey, I admire the integrity or the consistency. I believe that they would obviously share it if it was not going against their strict policy. But man, I will say this, had I known, and maybe the show turns out to be a success, maybe they change their policy in the next week or two with summer looming. But I would not have booked Boston, especially a 280-seat venue, if I had known that 1.5 of my most powerful avenues was shut off. I didn't even think to ask, like, hey, are you guys, I know we've had vaccines, and Massachusetts is one of the most vaccinated states, and they've opened everything up, and it's not a college event, and I'm an alum, and there's a lot of alums. But you guys aren't against sending out an email promoting an alum who's doing a show at a non-college venue, right? Oh, you are? Oh, okay. Good thing I called and asked that incredibly specific question that seemed to be having a possibility of 0% chance of actually being true. I'm so glad I called and got that answer. So now I know not to totally fuck over my career on my first big show out of quarantine. So thank you, Williams, and thank you, Georgetown, for letting me know. Much appreciated. And I will continue to not donate as an alum because I gave $7,000 this week to various charities. So I'm broke for the month because my feeling on comedy, this is me now talking again, podcast listener. I did actually do that. I exceeded my considerable charitable donations from last year because I had money right now. And I said, I don't know. I'm always pessimistic about my career. And I go, you know what? I want to give to the charities now. I want to like max out all my donations. I gave to a couple food banks, ALS, Leukemia, Lymphoma Society, Hope for Haiti. I made a bunch of donations this week. So now I'm broke for the month. Which is fine. I don't mind because I figured, you know what, comedy and its relative riches is not bringing me any joy whatsoever. But you know what, if I can provide a treatment for a blood cancer patient or a meal for a kid in South Sudan or pay for a meal at the Trenton Soup Kitchen, well then fuck it. A warm meal in a starving person's belly is going to make them a lot happier than comedy makes me. So I'm broke this month, but I've already exceeded my charitable donations from last year. So that feels good in a way. But that's why I don't give to my. I just at some point when I was broke, I stopped giving to my college. I never gave to law school because I was so unhappy there. It's not their fault really, but I just was. It's hard to be like, I can't wait to donate. Because you made me so miserable that I'd start doing comedy, which is the only thing that's ever made me more miserable than law school. But I haven't given to Williams College or my high school, which is a fucking cost like $60,000 a year to go to now, Riverdale. I just stopped giving for various reasons. But then when I started making money again, giving to charity, I was like, it just doesn't feel right to be like, here's $500, wealthy private school. Like that money can go to starving kids or ALS patients or whoever the hell else I donated to. I just went on like a nutso spending spree. Like, but isn't that helpful when you're doing, instead of retail therapy, where I'm like, I got two new shirts and some Balenciagas. I'm just like, yeah, this check paid for an entire dinner at the Trenton Soup Kitchen. So that feels good. I hope everything comes stamped with paid for by a comedy genius for that meal, but it probably doesn't. But yeah, that's what I do with my spare time now. I don't know how to, I'm not sure where happiness is going to come from, really. But it's, I'm trying to once again, last year it was guilt. I was making so much money when nobody was making, when lots of people were not making money and really struggling. So I felt like I had to give a lot of money to charity because I was just like, I am fine. I didn't even need any of this comedy money. It's beautiful. It's awesome. I'm grateful. But like, I didn't need any of it. I still have my job and my job was more than enough to pay my bills. But this year I was just like, maybe giving all this stuff will make me feel better. It's no longer, I don't feel guilty about having money because my career has already dipped probably like 40% from last year. But that's fine. It skyrocketed. It increased, you know, 20,000% last year, and now it's dipped like 40% from last year. But I don't know. Try to find something that makes me happy. And you know, it feels good. It does feel good when you can write a bunch of checks and just be like, look, there, stop making me feel bad, mind or world. There, I'm trying to help other people. So I guess the best way to help me is get tickets to that Boston show, so I don't totally eat a dick, and not in a sex positive LGBTQ way, but in a season 3 of The Shield when Acevedo is forced to give oral and it's recorded and then he's blackmailed. Spoiler! Anyway. The Shield, season 3, I believe, was 2005. So, sorry to spoil that. 16 years, folks. Get on it. Michael Chiklis follows me on Twitter, by the way. So, humble brag. Speaking of content I didn't enjoy, I did watch a movie that I've been meaning to watch for a while. I finally caught up on it on HBO Max. It's called Tenet. It's a Christopher Nolan joint starring Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington. And Tenet, I had heard, was very confusing, but then I was like, you know what? I loved Inception. Loved it. Followed it. Saw it in the theater. Did rewatch it, but didn't have to rewatch it. I was just like, that was amazing. What he just did, the story, the plot, the layering, the consistency, amazing. He obviously did The Dark Knight, one of my favorite movies ever. So Christopher Nolan has a long track record of making inventive, clever, amazing movies. But ever since Inception, which as much as I love The Dark Knight, Inception might be like his peak in some ways. And in terms of it's totally, like, Dark Knight is obviously adapted from certain things. He obviously made it his own, clearly, and it's an amazing movie. But Inception was just an incredible sort of original creation. But after that, he does Interstellar. Now, when I saw the preview for Interstellar, this was during the McConaissance, the Matthew McConaughey, like, dominating everything. So I was like, oh, you got McConaughey? Oh, it's like a space-time movie? Okay, well, you know, Christopher Nolan right now just came off the Dark Knight trilogy and Inception, so I'll see anything this guy makes. And then I saw it, and I was like, well, that was disappointing. I don't think it was terrible, but that was certainly disappointing. So his next movie, I'm like, oh, shit. World War II movie, Dunkirk, I'm there. And I watched it, and I predicted accurately on social media as soon as I left the theater. I said, well, that's going to win the Oscar for sound. And it did. No one makes great sound editing predictions like me, but it did. But I also said it felt like he took what could have been a strong World War II movie and had to Nolanize it. He was like, yeah, I could make this straightforward movie, but what if I layer it with time so you don't know when things are happening and you realize, oh, that's happening after. Oh, that already happened. It's a movie that I'm tempted to watch again to give a second chance to, because there were elements to it I liked, but I left the theater somewhat disappointed. And then Tenet. Okay, big IMAX movie. John David Washington and Robert Pattinson. I'm like, okay, well, that's already that's the Magic Johnson and Larry Bird of C-listers, as far as I'm concerned. But I was like, okay, well, it's really Christopher Nolan's the star of the movie at this point. He's so big and he's so talented that, like, his name trumps the actors in the movie unless he gets a Tom Hanks, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Denzel Washington type. It's going to be his name that sort of is the signature name on the film. So I didn't, obviously theaters got shut down and I kind of wanted to see it in the theater, and they made a valiant effort with Tenet to put it in theaters, but it didn't work out. And then it was like $20. And I was like, there's too much shit I'm behind on all these platforms. So I said, okay, I'll just wait. I'll wait till it's on some platform that I'm already paying for. So it's been on HBO Max, I think, since early June, I think. And I finally watched it this weekend. And I did not enjoy it at all. And I'm starting to think that Christopher Nolan is not so much out to make movies as he is out to make puzzles that are increasingly difficult. And it's like, with great visuals, like he puts his filmmate, like he writes and directs these movies. And I'm sure if I watched it four more times, I'd be like, wow, that was consistent. But, you know, a movie should reward you if you pay attention. It should either shock you or reward you. But if you're paying attention, you should get it. Inception to me was like that. When people were like, I didn't follow it, I was like, I think you're probably dumb. Because I did follow it. I didn't. It's not like I sat there with a note paper. I just sat, I watched it, thought it was brilliant. It's just an amazing movie, Inception. Really amazing. And ever since Inception, it seems like Christopher Nolan's like, too many people seem to understand Inception and enjoy it. So every movie I make from here on out has to be more confusing, more layered, and more unenjoyable. And he is succeeding as far as I'm concerned. And he hit his nadir with Tenet. I was just like, this feels, every scene for the first hour and 20 minutes of the movie felt like I was walking into the movie halfway, where I'm like, oh, what? And let's just get this out of the way, folks. If I'm Denzel Washington, I tell my son he's got to change his name. He's got to get rid of change Washington to Jefferson or something. Like, it's not working out, son. My name is, insert Marlowe GIF from The Wire, my name is my name. Now, on the positive, and I've always thought John David Washington was not good ever since Ballers. I remember Ballers, and one of my big things when Black Klansman came out, and I think he was not nominated for Best Actor, I said, I approve of that because no one who has ever been in Ballers should subsequently win an Academy Award. Ballers was terrible, and it's one of the main reasons I didn't support Elizabeth Warren. I thought, either you're lying about liking Ballers, or your taste in TV is so atrocious that I can't support you. And he was then in Black Klansman, where I thought he was fine. You know, fine. I did not think he was like a detriment to the film, but I think he's, you know, eh. And then, to his credit, I think there was so much funky dialogue in Tenet that most of his role was just making sure to spit out paragraphs of jargon. So, like, hard to give maybe the proper emotions when you're just like... And the writing was one of the worst I've seen for a Nolan movie. Like, John David Washington's character was almost... This is now not his fault. This is Nolan's fault. Was almost there to just keep telling you what's happening. Like, you know, this woman said, like, and then that's what I'm forgetting, but here's the gist. And then, of course, there was Afghanistan. Right, Afghanistan. When the Soviets invaded, that's when they got the bomb. Like, he was there to, in other words, the script was written, and then the John David Washington dialogue was for Christopher Nolan to say, to explain to all the stupid people what's going on. And I'm like, no, like, just stop having him being the constant DVD, like, the Nolan commentary as his character. But I think he is, I don't know, who's the worst son of a father in terms of going into the same industry and then being so much worse? Because right now, the drop-off from Denzel Washington to John David Washington is like one of those old people in Midsommar jumping off a cliff. Go see it. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now. You'll get the joke in 3 weeks when you watch it. But it was, I guess the joke would be like Frank Sinatra Jr. maybe. I don't even know. Obviously, I remember a friend and writer Luke Cunningham had a joke about why did Jacob Dylan go into music with the Wallflowers, like when your father already killed it. Now, I was a little biased there because I really liked the Wallflowers' first album a lot. But, you know, the joke stands. And for me, I'm like, is there anybody doing it this disproportionately worse than their predecessor parent? And if you feel free to write on the Podomatic page, please, if you want to comment on the episode. I appreciate the people who do. If you do, if you don't, it's fine. But if you have an answer to that question or thoughts on who could be considered like the worst nepotism drop-off. And I know like a lot of people, and the silver lining to this, of course, is that, hey, it's about time a black A-lister got to get their mediocre kid tons of work. Well, then fine. Let's get John David Washington on a reboot of Girls with Lena Dunham and let's make millions, HBO Max. But I thought Tenet was an incredible waste of my time. And it was... Now Christopher Nolan now has, and this is a bold statement for the writer-director of the Batman trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy, so I understand how this may come off. But Christopher Nolan is out of chances with me. He now has to earn me going back to see one of his movies. Like, I will no longer just go, Christopher Nolan, I'm there. He got three of those from me, and it's called Three Strikes and You're Out, and that's how we play baseball, a game I'm not that into anymore. You see how we do this full circle, folks? Do you see how it always comes back? Hated Tenet. It was just there's so much on streaming platforms right now, and I know it's weird to say it, but I hate at this point having my time wasted or not enjoying something just because there's so many options, and I'm like, I have 19 movies and 13 series that I wanted to start or try or watch, and then giving you my Saturday night to see you do some bullshit, Christopher Nolan, is insulting, frankly. It is, okay? And John David Washington, I'm sure you're a great guy. Your dad can't be enjoying what he's seeing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be... I know it sounds disrespectful, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful. I'm saying this out of respect for Denzel Washington, sort of a Mount Rushmore actor of my time, I'd say. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint the Mount Rushmore, but it would be... You know, I would have to say you'd have to throw Daniel Day-Lewis and Meryl Streep on right away. And then if you've got two spots left, you're talking about maybe you go one spot to either De Niro or Pacino. And then that fourth spot is going to go to Hanks or Denzel, right? Like the popular everyman type of actor, you get one spot, it's Hanks or Denzel. I know Rachel Nichols is out there rooting for Hanks to get it. Just kidding. And the other one would be the Italian icon spot, Pacino or De Niro. So you could go with the D's, De Niro and Denzel, to go with Streep and Day-Lewis, but then you're leaving off Jack Nicholson, who, to be fair, has been Jack Nicholson in movies for the last 30 years, but still is a three-time Oscar winner and a legend and an icon. So it's tough. It's tough. Maybe I think you put Nicholson after, maybe Nicholson ahead of Hanks, but after Pacino, De Niro. So then it's down to De Niro, Pacino, Denzel, and maybe you do the nice thing, and you say, we'll only take one Italian, and you go Denzel, De Niro, Streep, Day-Lewis, and then you've got three D's and a Streep, and that's called a porn film. Anyway, guys, Tenet, don't recommend it. John David Washington. I recommend, do what you want to do. You seem to be having some success. Don't take it from me. I think we're on total opposite ends of the spectrum. I have no representation and no career and boatloads of talent, and you're living large. So I guess continue what you're doing. Just know that your dad weeps at night when he sees you act. He's like, why couldn't he just be gay? And that's okay. To continue the theme, we're allies here at the Righteous Brick. I'm just saying, is that an outdated joke? Maybe that is. It's an outdated joke unless you're talking about somebody who's bigoted, but it would be weird to think that Denzel Washington, a lifelong Hollywood actor, is a bigot, and person of color, is a bigot. So it doesn't really work in that case. So I guess that's probably an outdated joke to go, all he's hoping is that my son's not gay. Burr, burr, burr. I'm an Italian comic doing Jersey shows, and let me tell you something. I'm okay with gay people, okay? I got no problem with gay people. But sometimes, you know, when I'm out walking with my pops, and we walk by some of these fanooks, and they're doing like a little extra, me and my pops are like, does it have to be that way? What's going on here? And I'm like, Dad, you can't say that no more. We're not doing that anymore. You got to be like open-minded. And my dad said, I am open-minded, but I'm closed asshole. You know what I'm saying? Hey, guys, that's a new character I'm working on called Irritatingly Popular Italian Comic. And no, it's not Sebastian Maniscalco, who I'm a big fan of, okay? So don't try to start a Maniscalco-Covan beef, okay? Don't try to start one, because it's not him I'm talking about. It's every other Italian comic. Yes, that was completely ad-libbed, what I just did, and I'm going to have to listen back to this podcast to retranscribe the magic I just spit out of my mouth, because that was... I didn't know how I was going to end that, folks, but then I said open-minded, and I said, boom, closed asshole, and I said it. So that was fun. That was a fun journey. Whatever the fuck I'm talking about, gut tickets to Boston is really the lesson of this episode. On top of that, guys, some other great announcements. I think I'm done. I don't need to drag this out anymore. You get your 45 minutes of JL. And sorry for the audio fuck up last week. I accidentally muted the intro music, so you had like quotes and then blank space. And hopefully some of you didn't realize, like, didn't stop listening. It was just, you know, you had to fast forward like a minute to get to me. But I'm trying to think, do I have anything else? I'm halfway through this book, 2034. I love it. It's the first fiction book I've read in a little while. It's basically about a potential World War III between the US and China, like a lot of cyber and naval stuff. I'm halfway through. It's awesome and terrifying. And then like I'm halfway through and I wake up the next morning over the weekend and it's like, Xi Jinping of China has said, I will fuck America in the face if you even talk shit to me. And I'm like, oh boy, seems like it's going to be an interesting sixth decade for me when we're going through cyber and naval warfare with Xi Jinping, who wants to be like, you know, Putin, but not a bitch. So should be fun times. But yeah, so far I'm enjoying the book, and that'll probably be one of the two books I review for my Gemmy shit, which I've been promising for a while, but this is the month. I've already mapped out when I'm going to record like the first batch of content. But it's just obviously very busy. It's been a busy last month at work. Finally, that's good. That's good for the firm, bad for a person who wants to sit and watch content and make comedy stuff. But, you know, like I've always said, the law firm is Boof from Teen Wolf. She's always been there, and you just got to respect it, because once Pamela Wells of comedy ditches you, you might be left with Boof, and you better appreciate Boof. And as I've always said, I think Boof was hotter than Pamela to begin with. Pamela Wells was just that, I'm blonde and have a fake tan, so therefore the 80s have anointed me the hot one. But I'm like, look at Boof. She's kind of she's secretly nasty. She's got that. She got like the little Dorothy Hamill look, so she's keeping up with the times. And, you know, she likes sports, and she's been on your dick, Scott, for like the entire movie. What's wrong with you? So anyway, that's just another trip down Teen Wolf memory lane. But yeah, lots of stuff coming for me. New shows, guys. Shows. You got to listen to this. because there's more shows now I'm booking. And I hope that this exponentially expands. No promise of that. But I am going to be at Helium in Philly on September 26th. Good Nights in Raleigh on October 6th. Tentatively, The Punchline in Atlanta, the 7th through the 9th. That's tentative, but I've been talking to him for a while, so I'm going to be in Atlanta at some point. So a little Southern swing. And then, of course, my special recording. If you're a fan and you're anywhere in New York, no reason to wait on those tickets either. Two shows on October 23rd. Get your tickets now. All links, I don't have links for Helium, Atlanta, or Philly yet. None of them. Two of those shows are confirmed, but they haven't updated the website. I'm going to be talking to them on Wednesday, so they will hopefully get those up by the end of the week. Atlanta is not confirmed. It's not like signed on the dotted line confirmed yet. So until that happens, obviously they won't be promoting it on the website. But Philly and Boston and New York. Sorry, I just said not Philly. Boston and New York. Get those tickets. Get them now. Links are at my website on my calendar page. And thank you as always for listening. And if you're not currently a listener, be sure you check out Making Podcasts Great Again. My plan is to end the show after roughly 200 episodes. We will keep it open, but I don't feel like doing it anymore, really. Just in terms of my own time, what I spend my time doing. We will keep it open, of course. I haven't discussed this officially with Jay, but I have told him I don't want to do it past this year. That was pretty clear. But we'll keep it open because obviously if Trump runs again, you know, I have a good impression. I have the best Trump content, the most voluminous Trump content. So I will, of course, bring it back for that. And then if he wins, I end it again. And if he loses, I end it again. So there could be a sequel to the podcast that will just continue on the regular feed if he runs again for president. But other than that, it's, you know, 200 episodes is a real nice run for a fucking character-driven podcast that I wish more. I'm so grateful for the thousands of people who listen to it, but I really wish it had hit that like 100,000 listeners level because it's, you know, sometimes I think people hear the videos online. They go, that's so funny. I'm like, yeah, you should check out the show. Like if you like my 2-minute videos, you'll love me in character, like doing a 45-minute politics show every week for free. But, you know, people like what they want. They do what they do. So I'm happy that you guys are listening to this show. Hopefully, if anybody out there feels like sharing the episode or recommending it to people on social media, I would appreciate that. No pressure. The only pressure I have is that Boston show, July 26th, 8 p.m., City Winery, and my special recording. Two shows, October 23rd, New York City. Both ticket links are on my website right now. So jlcomedy.com. Go to the calendar, get those tickets, tell your friends, and most importantly, I will see you next Tuesday.